Hi there, and thank you for taking a look at my website. This is Steve Browning here, and I'm going to read the prologue to my new book, which is called On the Trail of Sherlock Holmes. The book is, incidentally, available pretty much everywhere now, but it just does help the industry a little bit more if you can buy it direct from the publisher, which is Pen and Sword, pen-and-sword.co.uk. Why a prologue? Well, I think prologues used to be used much more in stories in the past because they are more direct, more fun sometimes than an introduction, which can be a little bit dry and dusty. So this is the prologue, and it is dated the 19th of September 1917. It is at an undisclosed British Army base. And Dr. John H. Watson is talking. Holmes and I had sat in companionable silence for some time after we finished our excellent meal at Simpson's in the Strand. The beef Wellington, named in honour of our greatest ever military man, was sublime. When he did not have a case and decided to eat at all, Holmes liked to partake of the very finest cuisine. It was the early spring of 1914, just after 7 in the evening, and we could see the bustling hordes scurrying along the streets below. Some were going home after a very long day, and others just coming out for a night's entertainment. "Do you think," Holmes said suddenly, "that people in 100 years will remember us?" "Probably not," I replied. "There will be all sorts of wonders then, like flying machines and probably devices to instantly communicate and ships that sail underwater. People will have holiday homes on the moon. Your excellent treatise on cigar ash and beekeeping will be small change in such a world." He had aged of late. I know he was desperately concerned about the state of the empire given the current grave situation, and only that morning had advised the Prime Minister at Downing Street. He still had those incredible bright eyes, each side of his hook-like nose, but his hair was tinged with silver now. My words had annoyed him. That was nothing new, but I cared so much for this man that I indulged in some sentimentality, a trait, amongst many others, for which I had often been soundly and unjustly, in my opinion, reprimanded. I was, after all, as he had often reminded me during the past 20-odd years, just an ordinary man, who often saw, but rarely observed. So I felt justified in trying, in my crude way, to add some balm to the situation. "Maybe, Holmes, maybe people will pass this place and say, Holmes and Watson used to eat there. Perhaps even some folk in 100 years will walk the streets of London to get a sense of your great gifts and want to feel the atmosphere as you solve the mysteries and crimes that had beaten the finest brains of Scotland Yard." "Why on earth would they do that, Watson?" "Because, Holmes, you are indescribable. You are one of a kind. You are unique in the annals of the history of these islands." "Just these islands, Watson?" He came back quick as a flash with a cheeky grin. He was mollified. During our many adventures together, I had noticed that he was surprisingly susceptible to flattery, and I sensed he was a happier man as we strolled the 2 miles back to Baker Street. I had an idea of writing a book then, of walks around our illustrious capital, which his many admirers could use. I could perhaps also add details of other places in Britain which witnessed his extraordinary talents. Alas, although I have started it, demands upon my time in the present dreadful war have prevented its completion, and the manuscript, such as it is, remains among notes for many other stories, such as The Giant Rat of Sumatra, in the vaults of the Bank of Cox and Company, the Strand. It is an idea for a future writer, maybe.